Over a period of four decades, C-SPAN has surveyed leading historians on the best and worst of America's presidents across a variety of categories: their ability to persuade the public, their leadership skills, the moral authority, and much more. The crucible of the presidency has forged some of the very best and very worst leaders in our national history, along with much in between. Now, based on interviews conducted over the years with a variety of presidential biographers, the new book, The Presidents, Noted Historians Rank America's Best and Worst Chief Executives, it provides not just a complete ranking of our presidents, but stories and analyses that capture the character of the men who held the office. To tell us more, we welcome Brian Lamb, C-SPAN's founding CEO and chairman and longtime on-camera interviewer, and Susan Swain, C-SPAN's co-CEO and one who's also been an on-camera host for C-SPAN for more than 30 years. It's a great pleasure to welcome Brian and Susan to the roundtable this morning. A delight to have you both back. Thank you very much for being here.
Thanks, Joe. Nice to hear your voice.
Hi, Joe.
Wonderful to hear yours. Brian, let us begin with you of how this particular project came about.
Well, actually, the woman sitting to my left that you can't see, Susan Swain, was the primary pusher on this thing. She gets very pushy when she wants something done. And we wanted to figure out some way to celebrate our 40th anniversary. I mean, the 40th is not that important. It's just that I'm getting old. And she said, here's my idea. I want to do a book based on presidents and the fact that we have done these three surveys over the years, like others have done, and ask 100 or so political scientists and journalists to rate presidents according to the 10 different categories that they've done it when they were presidents. And that's how it all started. She took my questions out of, my very important questions out of interviews that I did with 44 historians and made a narrative out of it for came up with 44 chapters of on each chapter on each president. That's it, Joe.
Well, Susan, why did you think such a project was so important?
Well, we have these two great resources. Brian has been doing interviews on Sunday nights on C-SPAN for 30 years, and among those interviews are some of the country's best-known contemporary presidential historians. So we have that wonderful resource in our archive. And then for 20 years, we've done these three national surveys of historians on effective presidential leadership. And so it seemed that marrying the two of those would produce an interesting work on what it means to be an effective president. You know, in this country, we've been talking about nothing else but since the 2016 election. What do we want from presidents? What makes a good president? And we thought that this might be a contribution to that discussion.
So let us talk about the process of an idea of the process, your process of ranking the presidents. When this project came together, the data is gathered. How does it all come together to apply to the final ranking?
Well, the data has been gathered three times over the last 20 years, 1999, 2009, and 2017. We did the first project in 1999, after we had just finished a major television project. We spent an entire year traveling to presidential historical locations, their birthplaces, their libraries, and the like, to do live television programs on the biographies of the presidents. When we were finished, we said, we'd like to gather this all together into something that's a little more data-driven. We've done so much that's conversational and anecdotal. And we went to these three historians that you referenced who have been longtime friends and contributors to our network, Doug Brinkley, Edna Medford, Richard Norton Smith, and they helped us devise the first presidential historian survey. 100 historians and professional observers of the presidency were sent this matrix of 10 qualities of leadership and asked to rank each president. The results of that was so successful. People were really interested, both the general public, journalists, political scientists. We decided to keep doing it each time a president left office. So we did it right at the end of the Bush presidency and then right at the end of the Obama presidency. And those three surveys were the organizational platform for the collection of biographies.
As Susan mentioned, Brian, one of the tools that you had at your disposal were these amazing interviews that you have done over the years. Give us a sense of the questions that you felt were important and the things that were important in asking historians to get to the root of the effectiveness and the importance of a particular president and leader.
Well, I obviously don't remember all the questions that I asked, but I go back to the process of getting ready for an interview. Most of them, almost all of them, wrote a book. And you read the book. And then as you go through it, I mean, I'm a generalist. I'm not a historian. I really ask questions for the average person. This is not an intellectual show. It's meant to answer, get answers for the simplest of questions on why a president did what they did. And that's how I approached it. And I, you know, you go back to each one of them. They're all known for certain things. And then you read these books and you find out little things that you didn't know about them. And you want to fill in the blanks. I don't care whether it's FDR or Calvin Coolidge or James Polk. Polk, there's a story about Polk, and I'm not going to go into it, where he had a physical procedure in his life that is so incredibly excruciating that I wouldn't want to even describe it here on this interview. But you didn't know that. And, you know, he died 3 months after his presidency. He walked, I think he possibly died from cholera. They're not sure. But he walked out of the presidency, and he's dead. He's only 50 years old. So it's or 53. And it's these little things that are always interesting because in a narrative like this, it's not only what they did in war or what they did with the economy. It's what they were like as people.
The other fascinating thing, Brian, is the people that you talk to, as you said many times, a book. And when you think of these historians, I mean, they're often just so associated with the particular presidents. Lou Cannon on Reagan, Robert Caro on Lyndon Johnson, of course, Harold Holzer on Abraham Lincoln. They have spent, in some cases, in many cases, their entire lives working and finding information about these presidents.
Yeah, Harold Holzer's written 52 books on Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
And Robert Caro has spent 40 years on Lyndon Johnson. You just go down the list. Richard Norton Smith is in the middle of writing probably the definitive biography of Gerald R. Ford, and it includes an enormous amount of research he's done on the pardon and how that came about. And he'll come out with that book in 2021. It'll be after the next election. But these fabulous characters have spent years going through all the files. Of course, the biggest story probably ever in research for a book on the presidency is probably Robert Caro, and we know that story. But a lot of other historians have done just as much work or close to as much work on their presidents that they're interested in.
Susan, it is safe to say that you do not rank the current president, and just because you decide to do this when a president has completed their service, why is that important, and why then did you also include a section on our 45th president?
Well, we've decided even doing the survey as they're leaving office is a bit controversial because historians will say you need time to sort of temper the view of what happened. And, of course, we understand that. But our thought in doing it as they're leaving is we put a marker down. This is the historian's first view as they've completed their term of service. And it makes it fascinating to watch over the course of decades how presidents move. And they do, in fact, some of them have held steady to their spot in the lineup, but others have moved up and moved down as we've gotten more information and moved farther away. So that's why President Trump won't be included until his last time in office. After his final election, we will then do the survey that includes him. But we know that everybody's talking about President Trump, and people are going to want to know what historians think about his service so far. So the way we threaded that needle was we brought the three historians into our radio studio and did an hour-long podcast with them, all together at the table, and they have very different points of view. But we wanted them to comment about how some of the things we've seen with our current president fit in the context of history, his dealings with the press, for example, his assembly of his cabinet. So that just adds a little bit of historical context to the times that we're living through. And, you know, nearly everything that we're experiencing has a precedent. So it is somewhat comforting, I think, to know that over the course of our 200-plus-year history, that we've gone through times of turmoil, we've gone through ups and downs, we've gone through economic periods of highs and lows, and here we still are. So that's one of the things that I like about working on history projects.
Give us a sense, this question is for both of you, but give us a sense of why you think we, as the citizenry, are fascinated by things like this, of rankings, lists, of how it allows us to sort of organize our thoughts.
If you open up the sports page on any given day,
yeah,
there they are.
Yeah.
List after list. First thing I did this morning, and I'm not a rabid Washington Nats fan, but I like the baseball stuff. I looked up the batting averages right now and the ERA of the pitchers, just because I'm interested in seeing where they are. Lists, I'm not a BuzzFeed reader, but listicles are something that they get credit for. List after list after list. How many times do you see on the internet? And unfortunately, I click on them more than I should. Who are the 25 ugliest people in the history of the world? And you, before you know it, you're clicking on them. So there's no difference when it comes to presidents.
And Susan?
Well, how could I add anything to that? We wanted to do it with historians because we wanted to have the credibility. It's not a popularity poll. It's based on metrics from people who are professional at this. But the resulting product gives anybody who's interested in history a sounding board to offer their own opinions. And that's really what we hoped it would do, is prompt people to say, I totally disagree with that for the following reasons. We want people to be interested in our country's history, and the list provides an opportunity to foster some lively debate. I can tell you it happened around my dinner table when these lists came out.
It does seem, though, if you look at just the top 10 of your list, and Abraham Lincoln is at the top, that, I mean, people could argue one way or the other, but they all make sense, right? I mean, you could make an argument, Washington over Lincoln or whatever the case may be, but it does, they all make sense, don't they?
They do, but they're all long dead. That's another thing.
Yeah, well, there's that.
Because really, we've had some time to feel a little bit more, I'd say, fondly about their time in service. And also, our country has changed a lot, even since the age of Eisenhower, who's in the number 5 position. So it's interesting that Ronald Reagan was the only president to make the top 10 on the list. When we're close to these guys, I mean, just look at Harry Truman, for example. My grandparents were very rabid about one way or the other about Harry Truman during his time of service. Heard lots of opinions about his presidency. And he was down in opinion polls for a long time. And then along comes David McCullough's biography. And people start feeling, hey, maybe we should take another look at this guy. And here he is in number 6 in our historian's poll. So our views of the contemporary presidents change as the country changes, and as our views about the economy or civil rights and that change in our society. So that's why I think the top 5 are the ones that are pretty far in our rearview mirror.
You mentioned that, and I find it interesting because if you look at a president like George W. Bush, even he seems to, we're 2 presidents away, but he seems to have, he's gone up in your ranking, and he seems to gone up in public opinion as well. And I assume that's a comparison, obviously, to the current administration, but also it does allow the dust to settle a little bit.
It does, but George W. Bush has only had, he's had his first when he came, and then one other in 2017, and he only moved up one spot. And that's because we have one more president in the list. I'd say he had some big issues going on in the country, which
Absolutely.
Are still very, very current in our minds. And I think it'll be interesting to see what happens to him in the next survey when we're yet a little bit farther away. And we have the comparison of the incumbent to have people's thoughts gel a little differently. I mean, as much as we say these people are professional historians, they are people, too, and they have opinions, and they have political points of view. We tried to temper for that by bringing in people from all different demographics and all different points on the political spectrum to take our survey.
Brian, as an interviewer, and I'm not asking you a favorite president, but I am asking you of who you're fascinated by, who you enjoy reading those books and finding out more about.
I had a personal experience 863 years ago when I was a social aide to Lyndon Johnson. And I was 24 years old, and I would literally stand next to him as the receiving line came by, and I had to get their names and pass it on to him. And I would do that about three times a week. And then to bump into two things. Robert Caro.
Yep.
Which has been, he's a tremendous interview. But just as importantly, the fabulous tapes of his Oval Office conversations. And this radio station of ours here has put on almost every single one of those conversations. It's the greatest civics lesson anybody could ever hope to get in a classroom. And so I'm fascinated by Lyndon Johnson, and I was around him. I knew what he looked like. I remember what his hands looked like, the shoes that he wore, the tie that he tied, all that stuff. So getting that perspective when I was 24 and now been going back and reading about what he was like behind the scenes is just a magnificent experience.
What is it like when you read something then by Doris Kearns Goodwin, who is now a historian but also worked for Johnson very closely?
I haven't read as much about her take on Lyndon Johnson, but I have to say this about Doris Kearns Goodwin. Her book that she did called No Ordinary Time,
yes,
on FDR and what happened, I think it was the second term and the third term in the second floor of the White House, it's an unbelievable book to read, and it gives you some great insight to the nine people that lived on that floor. So I don't, I've talked to her about him, but I really haven't read that much about her take on Lyndon Johnson, even though she was very young when she had access to him.
Let me ask a question, and this may be a sensitive question, but I'm interested in it. During the last election in 2016, there were a group of very highly thought of historians, David McCullough, Ken Burns, and I believe even Douglas Brinkley, were a part of a group who got together and were talking about the concerns that they had about Donald Trump prior to the election. I'm curious as to, given your job and what your projects are, of what you make of that. The way David McCullough explained it to me was it's the difference between right and wrong versus right versus left. I'm curious as to your thoughts on that.
Well, you actually brought up something that I have a very strong opinion about. And as much as I admire almost every historian that are on those videotapes and their comments about Donald Trump, and it has nothing to do with what I think of Donald Trump, I was disappointed. I don't want my historians to be close to politicians. I don't want them endorsing them. I don't want them criticizing them. I want them to be historians. And that's the only thing that David McCullough ever did in his life that disappointed me. He's a magnificent human being. I mean, the guy is just magnificent. He's just he's a great role model. And so, you know, it's none of my business. It's a free country. They can say whatever they want to. It won't change my opinion on the kind of history that he writes or anything like that. But I just wish those fellows had not done what they did, because we all have eyes and ears and can see what is going on, and we don't need them to tell us which way to go when we go into the voting booth.
Point taken. Although, Susan, it is extraordinary, isn't it?
It is. It's easy to understand them being drawn into it, though, because our cable television networks are full of chat shows, and they're always booking historians on, and they're wanting them to say something that is controversial and will attract audiences. So I think it takes some real effort to resist the personality-driven society that we live in today. We work pretty hard at it here not to be drawn into partisan comments. We really want to be seen as honest brokers. And I know these people do, too. We have enormous respect for them. But I think they're clearly we're struggling with this particular presidency, and that's probably what led them to be involved in it. The other thing that's interesting, I think it's okay to tell the story, is that Doug Brinkley went to the White House and spoke with President Trump.
Yes.
At the early part of his presidency.
It was actually in Florida. He was
in Florida?
Mar-a-Lago, yeah.
Yeah.
But I Let me also throw another one in, as long as you brought it up, Joe. I was also extremely disappointed in the Hamilton crowd. I loved the musical Hamilton. I don't think they had any business making it a fundraiser for Barack Obama or for Hillary Clinton. Everybody in this country is loving Hamilton, and they did it in a nonpartisan way. And why they wanted to take that chance, I can tell you, it was a big disappointment to me. I want them to stay out of it. But that's where I'm coming from. I think all these actors and actresses and all this stuff ought to, you know, be actors and actresses and stop trying to influence me on politics, because it isn't going to work.
Well, but that's you. I mean, that. So let me just spend the last couple of minutes on you for a moment, Brian Lamb. I mean, you that has been your way of doing this for a very long time, for 40 years on C-SPAN. I mean, you have set the gold standard in that regard. You are not looking, you're not looking for your opinions to get out. You are not looking for anything but the thoughts of others and very sobering questions. As an interviewer myself, you are at the top of the list. You're the best there is. And partially, I believe that is because you, it's all about the guest, it's all about the person, and it has nothing to do with you. That, while certainly is in my book lauded, it is very rare, isn't it?
Yes, and it's gotten rarer. It doesn't mean I'm right. At all.
Well, I think it may be, but go ahead.
No, it really doesn't. I mean, I have my own, as you can tell, I have my own prejudices where somebody ought to be when they're in the public view. I mean, it ticked me off when David Halberstam went to the Democratic National Convention and participated in the convention. My reaction was, really? Or Clint Eastwood went to the Republican convention? I don't need to hear from these folks. That's not why I watch them or read them. So I probably overdo it. Most people don't give a darn, but it's always been a pet peeve of mine, and I don't need to go on. I sound like an angry old man, which I am.
Well, no, really, Susan, is he really that angry? It doesn't seem that angry. Is he
no,
that angry? No.
He's not angry.
But the point is that, I mean, that's what, let's just say that is what news organizations, I mean, there is a separation of church and state. There is that separation that you at C-SPAN have always had, and I can't think of a time where you've ever crossed that line.
Well, frankly, Joe, that's why we were created from the very beginning. That was the motivation to create this place. And sometimes we take it, you know, to a fault where you sit there and let somebody say something that you know darn good and well isn't even true. And that's frustrating on the other end of it. But that's why we're here. And we've been, thanks to our cable television industry supporters, we've been able to do this without ever being questioned about the ratings, about being stars, about making money for anybody. And we've just been very lucky. And who knows how long it lasts. I've always said this is an experiment. In this country, it's hard to maintain a nonprofit organization that's not being paid for by the federal government.
Yeah, and the reason that the cable networks are driven to personality, and they have been over the past couple decades, is because they've got to attract an audience. We're so fortunate to be doing this as a not-for-profit. So that means we can take personality out of it and still survive. We really couldn't make it commercially.
C-SPAN was created by cable in 1979. It's celebrating its 40th anniversary. You can find out more about the ranking by going to cspan.org/thepresidents. The new book is The Presidents. Noted historians rank America's best and worst chief executives. Brian Lamb is C-SPAN's founding CEO and chairman and longtime on-camera interviewer. Susan Swain is C-SPAN's co-CEO and has been on-camera host for more than 30 years. Brian Lamb, Susan Swain, what a great pleasure to have you both on. Always a delight to speak with you, and I thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on 40 years.
Joe, thank you very much. Good interview.
A great pleasure. Thank you very much. Again, the name of the new book is The Presidents. Noted historians rank America's best and worst chief executives, from Brian Lamb, Susan Swain, and C-SPAN. The book is published by Public Affairs. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.